and a very good morning to Bill Mackay.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Who is in the School of Architecture, Senior Lecturer in the School of Architecture and Planning at the University of Auckland. Now, part two of our thoughts on the RMA on its way out and what's proposed for the three new bits of legislation to replace it. Go ahead, Bill.
So last time I talked about what was wrong with the RMA in practice. So what's happening? The RMA, we have to remember, despite everyone moaning about how it hampers progress, et cetera, and everyone agrees it does need changing, it did come out of a laissez-faire free market era. So the fourth Labor government developed it, and then the National government after that, they tinkered with it and then put it into law. So the issue with the RMA is that, to sum it up very crudely, but this is how developers operate, you can do anything you want if you don't have a significant adverse effect on the environment. And in practice, what that means is if you've got enough money to buy enough experts to argue your case, you win. And if you can provide adequate mitigation, which can be more dollars to buy off neighbours, you're fine. And opponents in the community, we don't have money. So our tactic is delay, 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 delay through appeals. So that's effectively where we're at. So what's changing? Absolutely everything. The whole RMA goes. And the problem with the RMA, because it came out of that era, is it allows you to do anything you want, but it's effects-based. So when the council looks at the proposal, your local council looks at the proposal, they're looking at the environmental effects. So you can get situations, which we've currently got in my inner Auckland street, where we have a countdown supermarket at one end of it. This street, it's in kind of Ponsonby area, 1 kilometre long, quite long, but we've got a countdown supermarket at one end, and now we're getting another one at our end. And this is a very nice part of town. It's on, the countdown will be on a very sunny site, nice views. It's on the bus route. It's close to dairies, cafes, restaurants, takeaways, a whole row of things, a primary school, a childcare. It's 5 minutes drive, 15 minutes walk to the other countdown, or you can take a 10-minute bus ride to a new world. And wouldn't apartments be better there? You know, wouldn't this address our national housing crisis? We don't have a shortage of supermarkets. So that's the problem there. You get this kind of ad hoc development. So the reforms are less focused on the potential effects of a development and more strategy focused. And that's the key thing that's come out of it all. And if your development fits with a city or environmental strategy, and your development is good for that, your consents will be faster and easier. That's the theory anyway. And hopefully for our cities, this will mean better thought out development. And for greenfields, it will hopefully mean less big ad hoc housing developments on arable soils or environmentally important areas. So let's look at, very briefly, the three acts that are replacing the RMA. And there has been a bit of stick directed at this. We're getting rid of one thing and we're replacing it with the other, with three. But the first one is the Natural and Built Environments Act. This one is effectively RMA version 2. What it does primarily is it separates the two environments because they are different, the natural environment and the built environment. Under the RMA, whatever you do in either of those, it's a one-size-fits-all process. It's the same process. Now it will be different. This Act also will establish a national planning framework, which will look at environmental natural limits rather than saying we can keep on developing, keep on, et cetera, et cetera. And it will look at targets, outcomes, all sorts of things, and it will set up the framework where there are some mandatory things in here that local government will have to comply with. And that brings us to the second act, which is the Strategic Planning Act. And in this one, councils will have to establish long-term strategies. So development is more directed than the RMA's ad hoc thing, effects-based stuff. So what's suitable for development, what areas, what kind of things we want in certain places, what needs protection, what infrastructure will be needed, what's vulnerable to climate change and earthquakes and things like that. So councils will have to look at those, and there will be strategic outcomes that are more focused. So this new regime is going to be more prescriptive than the RMA, but more directed to what's better for the wider city than what someone wants to do on their particular site.
How does this happen over three acts, though? Because that's one of the interesting sort of challenges in moving from one to three.
Yeah, well, the big one sets up the framework, and then the second one is basically what councils will have to do. And at the moment, councils do have heaps of plans, and not many people know that actually there are two councils generally in your area, a regional council and a city or district council, and often their boundaries don't overlap. Often they have conflicting plans, and there's a bit of conflict about buses in Wellington recently. There are only a few places in New Zealand where there is one council, and we call that a unitary council. Auckland, of course, with its new unitary plan, three at the top of the South Island, one in Gisborne, and the Chatham Islands. So the second act, to answer your question, is actually saying this is what you guys have to do in local government. So the first one's a central government thing, the second one's a local government thing, and the last one is a Climate Change Adaptation Act. And this will, you know, support response to effects of climate change, e.g. manage retreat funding and financing adaptation, which I kind of interpret as a little pot of money for a certain political party. So in summary, this new regime's going to be more prescriptive. There'll be more of an emphasis on national and local direction and strategies. There'll be much more combining of plans into one big spatial plan, similar to what we've got in Auckland now. So we don't have regional councils, local councils at odds with each other, certain plans taking precedence over others, you know, that sort of thing. But my concerns, and I've got three just to finish off. Number one, the capacity of the smaller councils to do this work, to formulate the strategies. You know, that's the number of staff, the expertise of them. Number two, and this is the most important one, I think, is that the public and the community need to get involved at strategy formulation stage. So if you're interested in your area or your city, you have to get in there early and influence that, because that's where all the discussion and the battles will take place. On the other hand, on the council side, consultation needs to be genuine and good at this stage. So get in there and do it properly, because later when you find out something's planned for next door, it will be too late. And then the last one is heritage, and not looking too flash there at the moment. There will be more protection of wahi tapu, we think. That's great. But special character areas, you know, streets of villas and things like that, other blanket coverage stuff, is at risk. And then also there's going to be a higher bar for heritage protection. A building will have to be significant rather than worthy of saving. So that's it. Good intentions, just like the RMA 30 years ago, but the devil's in the details. So, of course, I'll be coming back to this all year.
Well, the other matter that is, and I've still not got this clear, is how you weigh up the what trumps what. And I'm listening to you, but you're still going to have arguments in the courts potentially over exactly where lines are drawn.
Well,
much more to discuss, Bill. Thank you so much for today. Bill Mackay, Senior Lecturer in the School of Architecture and Planning at the University of Auckland.